You're listening to the FQXI podcast. I'm just not certain about anything anymore. There's just too much controversy. Perhaps we should all just give up on trying to work out difficult physics and math and leave it to the plants.
Sorry, Brendan, did you mean to say plants there? Leave difficult physics and maths to the plants?
Oh yes, I'm quite serious. Experiments have shown that plants can now do arithmetic division. Arithmetic division! Even I struggle with that at times, especially dividing by 7. I hate that. The work was carried out by Martin Howard, a computational and systems biologist at the John Innes Centre in Norwich, in the UK. Reporter Corinne Pikema met up with Martin Howard, who told her about these botanical math wizards. Plants. Seriously, plants doing math.
In the background, Indian preschool children are learning to count, laying down the foundations for the complicated calculations and mathematics they will undoubtedly encounter in their later school years. And recent research published in the journal eLife suggests that we humans might not be the only ones using maths. Plants, it turns out, could be using a form of arithmetic to keep track of their starch reserves throughout the night to make sure that they never run low on energy. In a busy cafe, I met up with Martin Howard, Professor of Computational and Systems Biology at the John Innes Centre in Norwich and an author on the paper, to find out exactly how and why plants might be engaging in some clever maths. I began by asking him why it could be such a useful tool for plants.
Plants, as most of you may know, during the day, when the sun's up, they get their energy from photosynthesis. Obviously, there's a bit of a problem during the night. The sun sets, their source of energy has vanished, and plants get around this by diverting some of the energy from the sun during the day, and they make starch. And this is stored such that during the night, they can use up their starch so they can go on metabolizing and growing. What we've really been studying is the way in which this starch is broken down during the night.
What made you realize that a sophisticated process might be going on to help the plants use their energy sensibly?
So it was really the experiments that we did varying the time at which darkness would fall for the plants. We also varied the flux of light during the day, so we could vary the intensity of light which we exposed the plants to. And, you know, we could, even more complicated things, we varied the flux of different parts of the previous day. Nothing mattered, right? Regardless of what we did, the plants could always work out the correct degradation rate, so whatever level of starch they had got to at the end of the daylight hours, however long it had to go to dawn, they could always work out the right rate.
So what is the sort of maths that we're talking about, and how does the plant do it?
The first thing to say is how plants are not doing it. So one thing you might think is, oh, a plant's a bit like my pocket calculator, or it's like my personal computer, and there's some digital calculation that's going on in here, and it's dividing like my computer does it. It was much more likely to be done through a kind of chemical process. So what we hypothesized in our models was that there were two species of chemicals. One molecule whose concentration would record the amount of starch that the plant had, another molecule that would record the length of time to go until dawn. What we realized then was that if you made them interact with one another appropriately, you could naturally arrange for the ratio of the concentrations of these two molecules to be computed. And basically the way this works is you have your S molecule that's telling you how much starch you have, encouraging the breakdown of starch, and your T molecule that's recording the time to dawn, trying to stop that process. And if you think of a division calculation, say S over T, that's sort of what's happening there. The more S you have, the bigger the number. The more T you have, the smaller the number, because you're dividing by it. And that's basically what's being implemented in these chemical interactions. And if you go through the maths and work out, you know, what implications that has, you can make a ratio calculation. And that's how we think it's done.
What are the experiments that you have conducted, and how do they support this idea?
So, I mean, first of all, they're the experiments that led us to that hypothesis. So just measuring starch during the day and during the night, so, and then doing these various perturbations that I've talked about with early and late nights and varying the light flux. And we did them in more than one plant as well, just to make sure this wasn't a particular feature of one plant. But then we tried to take the models and test some of the predictions that these models made. One was that this calculation was being done continuously all the time. It wasn't a sort of one-off thing. It was done all the time. So at every stage of the night, the plant was sort of, you know, measuring the amount of starch, measuring the time to dawn, and then doing this calculation. And we tested that by a rather strange experiment of actually turning the lights on in the middle of the night. And by doing that, they suddenly start making more starch. And then at the end of that light period, when we turn the lights off again, we then expected that they would degrade the starch more quickly because they just made some and there was even less time to go to dawn. And there should be a different rate of starch degradation at that moment versus the rate before the light period. And that's what we found. And we discovered that there was a whole bunch of mutants. So when you interfered with the genes that regulated starch degradation, the enzymes that actually enzymatically ate up the starch in your system, you saw this. You saw they weren't doing perfect division. They were only doing a calculation that was proportional to division. And we could see that in our experiments. That was quite, I think, a powerful confirmation of the model.
These findings could signify an entirely new way of thinking about plant biology and biological systems more generally. It may, for instance, turn out that male penguins who guard their eggs under harsh conditions while the females go out to find food depend on similar calculations to make their energy reserves last throughout the 2 months until the females come back. And the results could well go far beyond the boundaries of biology. Synthetic biologists, for instance, in their aim to design and build artificial systems that mimic biological systems, might have to reconsider the way in which they are currently applying the maths in their engineered systems.
What I think this system has taught us is that you don't necessarily want to do everything digitally. In synthetic biology, most of the field has been about implementing logic gates in genetics, you know, implementing an AND or a NAND or a NOR gate, these things you have on computers, but doing it through gene expression. And I think this alternative idea of analog computation is much more powerful in that context.
Thank you to Martin Howard, talking with Corinne Pickermer there.
That's all we have time for in this edition. Thank you once more to Frank Wilczek, Ben Still, and Reinhard Werner.
We would like to stress that no animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Although I have now thrown out a bunch of my houseplants because they were looking at me in a shifty way.
He's been Brendan Foster.
And she's been Zia Morali.
You know Tegmark and Gire are going to fire us now.
The next edition of the podcast will be hosted by plants.